green. All right. About 2 years ago in Britain, actually, they had elderly people buying old encyclopedias for, I forgot what the price was, but really low price, because they found out that those really burnt very well in a long time in their fireplaces in the winter. They would buy those encyclopedias from antique stores and just burn them, because that was their way of getting around all the carbon tax and all that stuff, because the British government had forgotten to put a carbon tax on books. But they have a lot of carbon in them, and they're burning them. So that's what actually happens when you have the government involved in the whole thing, you know, trying to force their ethical decisions on us. And we're going to talk a little bit later today about government intervention and why government intervention in all these areas, including taxes and regulations and so on, it's nothing else but an attempt by the government to control your ethical choices. All government intervention is a religious intervention. But we're going to talk about something much much better now. How is wealth accumulated, and how is wealth destroyed in an economy? Let me give you a little prehistory to this lecture. It was actually an article written in Bulgarian by me. It was several years ago when a newspaper in Eastern Europe, in Bulgaria actually, asked a socialist economist a question. And the question was pretty good. Why is it that the same worker works the same number of hours in Eastern Europe and in the United States, but in the United States the average worker makes $22 an hour, but in Bulgaria, he makes only $1.50 an hour? That is a pretty good question, isn't it? Where does the 15-fold difference in productivity come from? How come you have the same person working the same number of hours, but one gets 15 times more than the other in the two different cultures? The goal of the chief editor, and he's a good friend, he was a good friend of mine, he passed away several years ago, but his goal was to educate his readers with a short, easy to understand and illuminating article. The socialist economist replied with a 25-page essay full of professional language. That no one could understand, including the economist himself. So the chief editor filed the article in the round file and called me, the Protestant missionary, and said, "Bozhidar, I need an article. I need it quick. I need it simple. I need it digestible. I need it informing on why is there a 15-fold difference between a Bulgarian worker and an American worker in terms of payment. If they work the same number of hours, they have the same qualifications. So do you have an article?" And I did. And here's the time to say it. If you are going on the mission field, and if you are a Reformed missionary, and if you don't have an article, a simple, easy-to-understand article, foundational article, on every area of life you're going to be asked about to give to a local newspaper, you better don't go to the mission field. Okay? Because if you don't go to the mission field, prepare to speak to every area of life, but you're only prepared to speak to the spiritual areas of life, then you're not a good missionary. You're not teaching the nations. Okay? Anyway. So a good Reformed missionary always has a simple, digestible, and informing article on every aspect of human life and action. And if he doesn't, he must go to his Reformed heritage. Because somewhere back in our history of Reformed thought or action, we do have good examples or good articles or good inspirations for everything. So what I did is I went to one of my ancestors in the faith, a Puritan ancestor in the faith, whose name is Daniel Defoe. Okay? And Daniel Defoe has a character that is Dutch, of course. And his name is Robinson Crusoe. So I went back to Robinson Crusoe to help my readers in Bulgaria understand where wealth comes from, where productivity comes from, how wealth is accumulated, how productivity grows, and how it can be destroyed. Anybody who hasn't read Robinson Crusoe? You all know about Robinson Crusoe, right? You know what he did. You know that there is a real character behind him. The real character is not Dutch, he's Scottish. Okay? The real character is Alexander Selkirk. But I'm not going to talk about Alexander Selkirk. He actually did show in practice what can be done by one man on one little island. But we're going to talk about it some other time, not today. But let's imagine Robinson, our literary character, on an uninhabited island. Okay. The ship is sinking. He's on the island. He can't build anything to go anywhere. He doesn't know where he is. There's not a single soul on the island except himself. And there is no economy developed on the island that he can go to that economy, pull out the gold, pull the gold out of his pocket and pay these people there and eat. There's nothing. There's no productivity. Productivity is zero. Wealth is zero. There is no stored food. There's no stored anything. And he needs to do something in order to survive. He's got immediate needs. He needs to eat. That's the best place to start from. Ground zero. And let's see how he accumulates wealth. Of course, he may have a few tools from the ship to start with, but none of these tools will give him any immediate solution. Right? If you don't have food, having a shovel doesn't help you a lot. Even if you have some seeds and you want to start, you want to start planting those seeds, you still have to wait for some time. You can't eat the seeds. Right? But he needs to eat. He needs to eat now. Alright. Well, we'll give him a solution to this immediate need are the few trees near the beach with fruits on them. Tropical fruit, and he can, go and pick that fruit. There is a problem, though. The trees are difficult to climb. So he finally finds a way to climb them. But it is so difficult that it takes him a whole day of work to gather only as much fruit as to survive. Okay? And then go to sleep at night to recuperate for the next day. So he has to work for 12 hours a day to get only as much food as he needs for the day and go to sleep and the next day go to work again, climb those trees again for 12 hours a day, then go to sleep again and then climb those trees again, eat and then go to sleep. That's called subsistence farming. Nothing is left at the end of the day for you because that's only as much as you, you can only harvest as much as you can eat for the day. That's called subsistence farming. Okay? And, by the way, even today, about one third of the world today lives on subsistence farming. If you go to places like Kenya or Sub-Saharan Africa, you will see that people only gather as much food as they have to eat for the dry season and in the rain season. They pretty much starve. They don't even know how to can food, but even if they did know how to can food, there's not much food around anyway to can left. So, one day Robinson, being Dutch, has an idea. his idea is, why don't I make a 20-foot pole to try to knock fruit down instead of climbing up those trees? That's a great idea, isn't it? Because now he doesn't have to spend all this time climbing the tree and trying to get all that fruit, risking to fall off the tree and so on, so he can knock fruit down. He imagines it's going to increase his productivity. It will help him actually gather all the fruit he needs for the day within 6 hours, not within 12 hours, by just knocking fruit down. There is a problem, though. He needs to spend some time producing that 20-foot pole. But remember, he doesn't have the time. He has to work for 12 hours a day if he wants to survive, if he doesn't want to go hungry. One day, Robinson decides that I'm going to go hungry for half a day, but I'm going to produce that 20-foot pole. And he spends a half day making a 20-foot pole to knock fruit down without having to climb the trees. The next day he tries his new production tool and finds out that yes, it has doubled his productivity. Within 6 hours, he can knock down enough fruit to get him through the day. Okay? He can knock down, he can do two things now. He can either work for 12 hours and produce double the quantity he used to produce before, or he can work for 6 hours, knock all the fruits down that he needs for the day, and the next 6 hours, what is he doing? Well, we'll see. But this is our first lesson as to how you increase productivity. Increasing productivity in an economy comes from that good, old, religious, old-fashioned, ethical concept, sacrifice. Sacrifice. From forbearing present consumption and apply your time and your resources to work to produce something that will increase your productivity. Increasing productivity always comes with a cost. And that cost is you go hungry for half a day. Well, maybe there are different costs, but it always comes from sacrifice. Now, Robinson has several options now, like I said. He can work half a day, have as much as he had before, or he can work the whole day. Well, let's say he decides to work the whole day, and he decides to, and he produces double he produced before. Okay? Now, he has all this fruit, and he has to decide what to do with it. Now, he can eat as much as he ate before and save the rest. Or he can double his rations. He can eat as much as he had before, or he and save the rest, or he can decide to double his rations. That is the biggest issue in our economy today. We produce not double, we produce 16 to 100 times more today than Americans used to produce 200 years ago. And our biggest issue today is, what do we do with this? Do we eat it all in an orgy of self-indulgence? Or do we forbear present consumption and save what we have for something else? And we'll see for what. Robinson has to make that decision. He's Dutch. And he decides I'm not going to eat it all. I'm going to save it. He makes an ethical decision to save it. Alright. So he works for several days, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 5 weeks, and eats as much as he ate before, but he produces twice as he produced before. And within, let's say, 3 weeks, he produces enough that will, that he saves actually enough that will get him through the next 3 weeks without having to work. So now he can stop working for 3 weeks and he can sit there, do nothing, and just eat as much as he ate before and consume it all. But remember, he's Dutch. And he decides to take this whole thing and take a trip to the heart of the island and see what he can find there. And he imagines 3 weeks is going to be enough to go do some sightseeing and maybe look at some business opportunities in that island. So he takes everything he saved for 3 weeks in a bag and he starts his journey to the heart of the island. And he finds that there are many goats in that island. And he can actually catch some of them because they've never seen a human, and they're not afraid of a human, so he goes there and he catches two or three or several goats and comes back home. 3 weeks later, he returns with two goats. And now he's got two goats in his home that are future, that are meat packed in a skin. That's the way he listed them. Remember, feeding himself is his main thing. So this is stored meat in a skin. He doesn't even need a refrigerator for them. But they're also a milk factory. They're also a milk factory. He can milk them. Anybody milk goats here? Yay. Okay. Alright. So now he makes the calculations and he finds out that he can gather fodder for them for 1 hour a day. And then he can milk them for another 2 hours a day, which is 3 hours, and he can still work for 6 hours a day, knocking food down from the trees. And now he's got food, and he's got milk every day, and he's got meat saved up from future consumption. Well, of course, he's got a problem. If one day he eats that meat, there's going to be no more meat, and he's got to make the same journey into the island. So he decides that he's going to go catch male goat, bring it back there, and have little kids. And then grow them up, and this is meat again, and those that are female will be milk factories again, and so on. So he starts doing that. At some point, he doesn't even need to knock food down anymore. I mean, he can actually decide what he wants to do with his little economy. He can decide to go for meat, he can decide to go for milk, and he can decide to go for a fruit or for any combination of them. At some point, he discovers that what comes out of those goats is actually pretty good for putting it in the ground to fertilize the ground and grow some vegetables. He discovers some vegetables there. It even produces, even this little economy doesn't produce, even the waste from this little economy is so good. So he starts putting it in the ground and so on and so on. Okay. So he has several options now. He can diversify his diet. He can also work less than he worked before. Or he can work as much as he worked before and double his rations. Or he can do anything he wants to do, but he is not now under the immediate threat of starving and die, because he sacrificed at the very beginning. He sacrificed 6 hours of his life to produce something that eventually will lead him on the path to prosperity, because his productivity is now increasing exponentially. More and more, because of these 6 hours of sacrifice at the very beginning, and because of his ethical decision later to not eat at all, now his productivity is expanding exponentially. More and more and more and more. Robinson Crusoe was not the only Dutch that did that. In fact, that concept of sacrifice and present consumption for future benefits and productivity and therefore in wealth started in Holland. In the 1600s, that little nation applied to practice their Protestant Reformed faith. They actually sacrificed their present consumption for future benefits. And within a generation after Calvinism hit Holland, Holland became the economic center of Europe. That little nation, surrounded by swamps and marshes and the sea, moved from subsistence farming or fishing to becoming a nation with the mightiest navy in Europe, defeating greater and bigger enemies like England and France, and basically building an economic and trading empire all over the world. Why? Because they were a nation of Robinsons. They decided they were going to sacrifice present consumption for future benefits. And they built all that wealth. And from them, of course, everybody else learned. One day, Robinson is on the island, and Friday comes. You know who Friday is, right? It's a guy who comes, who runs from some tribesmen. He's a tribesman himself, but they were looking around, and they were not as productive as Robinson. And here's, you know, a pack of meat, which is Friday, and they decided we're going to eat this guy. He had better ideas about their diet and about his own life. He ran from them. Robinson helped him. So now Friday is there with Robinson, and he's working. He's part of his little economy. But Friday is a good fisherman. But he has no boat. And he has no fishing pole, and he has no nets. He has nothing. But that's not a problem by now. Why? Because by now, Robinson is productive enough to feed them both and work with Friday for 2 or more weeks to build his boat and to make his net. Now, with Friday's productivity increased, they have enough time to apply themselves to even better use of their time. The effect of the original sacrifice can be multiplied many times over if they keep saving and use the savings in the right way, not for increased consumption, but for more work and more investment in productivity. Eventually, the economy grows, starts growing exponentially, starting from humble beginnings and growing exponentially until they get to a point where they have too much and they don't know what to do with it, as America is today. Okay? There's no other way to become more effective, more productive, and wealthier. The only way is through sacrifice for bearing present consumption and investing in productivity. This is a lesson that we need to understand today in our modern economy, and especially when you hear all kinds of stuff on the news. And this is, there is a difference between spending for consumption and saving for future productivity. You will hear modern economists, you will hear modern politicians looking at what's called consumer index. And the consumer index tells them how much you and your parents spend on goods, on consumer goods, in Walmart, in Target, at the local car dealer, or anywhere else. So when you buy flat TV screens and so on. They look at that increased consumption as a sign of a healthy economy. And they say if people spend more, then the economy is much healthier. Now, let's go back to Robinson and explain to you what that means in simple terms. That means that if Robinson worked for 3 weeks and saved enough food for 3 weeks, then he decides that he's going to eat now 3 times as much as he ate before. Now he's producing only twice as much as he can eat, but let's say he decides to eat 3 times as much as he produces as he needs. What is going to happen to his saved food? Every day he's going to have less and less and less and less of it. If he eats more, if he consumes more than he produces, one day he's going to end up without fruit. And he will have to go to his previous level of consumption because there's going to be no more fruit. Welcome to modern America. We eat more than we produce. How are we able to eat more than we produce? Because previous generations ate less than they produced. Increased productivity for us today, and we're eating our inheritance away. That's what we're doing. What's important to understand that it's only through sacrifice, only through not consuming today what you can invest for tomorrow, is how the economy grows and how wealth is created. But let's look at Friday from a different perspective. What if Friday comes to the island and Friday is not an expert fisherman, but Friday is an expert IRS agent? Robinson is still willing to innovate, to create new things, to produce more, but Friday comes and Friday says, you know what, my specialty is in protecting you, making sure that you have all the roads that you need, and making sure that you don't really leave a lot of carbon footprint, and making sure that you have all the welfare you need. Be socially secure. Because remember those days when you went hungry? If you just had me as an IRS agent to make sure that you had enough money to survive, enough food to survive, I would be there and you would have enough food to survive. And you didn't have to work that much. So Friday now is an IRS agent. And as an IRS agent, he is not only a specialist in collecting money, giving money to those that are in need. He's also a specialist in collecting money. He's got a big club. And he says, because I have a big club and I'm really concerned about you, I'm an IRS agent, I'm here to help, you're going to be giving me half of what you produce, so that everything is fair and square. Okay? So he's got a big club and he forces Robinson to give him half of what he produces. Okay? Now we have a really modern liberal economy here. One guy produces, the other guy takes half of the production of what's produced. Okay? So a really modern economy. Really the way the economy is conceived today by our politicians. But do you think Robinson would like that? Okay. So what Robinson is going to try to do is he's going to try, and it's natural, he's going to try to cheat on his tax return form. He's going to try to hide some of what he produces. Why? Because he went into producing all these things in the first place because he made an ethical choice to sacrifice and to grow. Now, his ethical feelings tell him that it is not fair that what he produces will be taken away by a guy with a bigger club, which also, known as IRS agent. Okay? So Robinson now, led by his ethical choice, by his ethical feelings, will decide that I need to spend some time hiding some of the food that I produce. Do you hear that? It's only natural. He decides, because his ethical feelings tell him that he is going to try to hide some of the food that he produces so that more food is left for him, and what is visible on the surface is less than what he really produces, so that Friday gets as little as possible without any danger to Robinson's well-being and Robinson's life. Okay? So now, part of his time is spent into devising newer and newer and newer ways of hiding food. Maybe he knocks off some fruit, knocks some fruit off the tree, and he sees Friday sleeping, which is what they do all the time. And he goes and he just eats as much as he can before Friday sees him. And then he goes back to him and says, "This is what I got. Well, listen, that's really little. That's as much as I produced today." So he spends all that time looking back and deciding, "I'm going to eat as much as I can before they see me." Consuming, so that what I consume is not consumed by him. Robinson is still committed to growth, but because his ethical feelings are now violated, because he's got this guy behind him who doesn't work, but he wants to have part of the produce, just because he's stronger than him, just because he has a bigger club, Robinson's thinking is now changed from investing back to consumption. Did you see that? From investing, he's going back to consumption. One day, his pole, his 20-foot pole, breaks. Now Robinson has to apply himself to work to produce another 20-foot pole. But because his ethical feelings are violated, he is not as motivated as he was before to invest in it. He prefers to go back climbing the trees. Why? It's much easier to hide fruit when you're climbing the trees. You can go up there and you're absolutely sure that an IRS agent is not going to apply himself so studiously to his work to climb the tree after you and actually watch you what you gather. And instead of gathering the fruit, you can eat it on the tree. And this way, he goes hungry, you eat, well, you're not as wealthy as you were before, but at least you get to consume everything that you produce. And you go back down there and you say, "Well, there's no fruit." "Well, I can see all the fruit." "Well, sorry, I just can't reach it." "Well, how come you're not starving?" "Well, I don't know." But what we see here is step by step, because we have somebody who applies force in the economy to rob somebody else of what they produce, we see that the thinking of Robinson is changed from producing more, from investing more and more and more into productivity. Now he's investing more and more into consumption, and one more thing that wasn't present before. He is investing in devising new ways to hide what he produced from the IRS agent. The appearance of an IRS agent in the economy, even if Robinson never changed in terms of his ethical commitment and his religious commitment, even if Robinson never changed, the mere appearance of a tax agent in the economy changes his orientation from investment and sacrifice to more consumption in ways of hiding, in ways of unproductive hiding of what he produced. Well, when I wrote that article, the editor liked it, and people liked it. There were a lot of comments on that article. So, Bulgarians learned from the American heritage, from the Dutch heritage, from the American heritage, from the Scottish heritage. And I hope that Bulgaria and Eastern Europe in general is on the road to actually understanding the deeper implications of all this. But the question today is America learning from her own heritage? My answer is she isn't. Because for the last century, Americans have gradually adopted an economic doctrine which is completely hostile to the spirit of their Puritan forefathers and to common sense in general. That not sacrifice, but consumption is what produces economic growth. We think we found a way to both eat the cake and have it at the same time. We think we found a way to make the same money spent on consumption and yet on increasing production. We have economists today that teach us that if you don't consume more, if you don't spend more when you go to Macy's or Walmart or any other place, if you don't spend more, you're actually not helping the economy. I have seen kids, even Christian kids, that come out of colleges where they study economics, and their professors tell them that more spending actually helps the economy. That means more eating will make you richer, right? We have economists like Krugman and others that tell African nations like Ethiopia that the problem with their economy is that they don't have enough spending. A nation like Ethiopia has got to have enough spending, you know. These people just don't spend. That's why they're poor. They don't spend enough. So, if we eat more, buy new cars more often, spend more money on entertainment, that will somehow make us richer and more productive. Our government is operating under that same doctrine more and more. Creating jobs, bailouts, cash for clunkers, printing more money, encouraging unrestricted expansion of money supply and credit. They're all offshoots of a grand delusion that sacrifice is not needed anymore, that utopia will come from this unbridled indulgence, just spending and eating more and more. This, of course, is the equivalent to believing that Robinson will become more productive and better off by consuming everything he produced the day before. But like I said earlier, production for consumption and investing for economic growth are two completely different activities, and they compete for our resources. The more we consume, the less we will have to make our life better in the future, and the less we will leave for our children, and you for your children, to be more productive. But the more we sacrifice, and the more we save, the more we will have to invest and make ourselves more productive. But America doesn't want to sacrifice anymore. We don't want to pay the cost for real economic growth. So we deceive ourselves that consumption comes at no cost. But we are wrong. There is cost for consumption. Consumption and investment both have costs. Consumption has costs in the future. Now we get what we want, but in the future we're not going to have it. Production, of course, investment, also has costs. The costs are today, but in the future we get more. What you all need to do in order to change that is to go back and learn from the heritage of our forefathers. Our indulgence has cost us much so far, and it will cost us more and more. What you all need to do is to learn to sacrifice your consumption today and save for tomorrow. We will have a lot of big enemies against us when we want to save for tomorrow. The government is going to be against us, especially the federal government. The Federal Reserve is going to be against us. Your own peers, your own the other kids from non-Christian families will be against you. They will all want to sacrifice to eat more and more, and they will laugh at your willingness to sacrifice for the future. But we need to learn, nevertheless, to sacrifice, because otherwise we'll be self-destroying ourselves. A great Christian preacher that I've been very influenced by said once that the future belongs to those who have prepared themselves for it. And you have to prepare yourself, just like Robinson did, to build wealth in the future by sacrifice in investing in growth. And it's time for us as Christians to start rebuilding. If other nations like Bulgaria are willing to learn from your own history, time for y'all to start learning from it. Thank you.